with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. There are CDs and tapes available of the speakers and workshops from this weekend. If you would like a set of the speakers, you can place an order Saturday night, and they will be available Sunday for you to pick up, or they can be shipped to you at no cost. A set of tapes is blank amount of money, and a set of CDs is blank amount of money.
A set of CDs is $25.
25? Okay, cool. I've asked Kelsey to read how it works.
Hey, Kelsey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kelsey.
Rarely have we seen a person fail and externally follow their path. Those should not recover are people who cannot or will not completely get themselves to the simple burden. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living in which to answer their honesty. The chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you've decided that you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. As some of these we bought. We thought we could find the easier, softer way, but we cannot. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold onto our old ideas, and the result was no, and we went, oh, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Not hope it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power, that one is God, and may you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore sustainability. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood them. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list for all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except for them to do so with injured them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and we were wrong promptly and it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying for only for our knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps we tried to get, especially to alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to make anything like perfect in these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we are willing to grow on spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We believe spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God couldn't rule for yourself. Thank you,
Kelsey. I've asked Kyle to read the traditions.
I'm Kyle, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kyle.
These are 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. Loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are trust to serve us. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought to never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, since the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Kyle.
We are glad that you are all here, and we appreciate your support of Nikki Pop. We would like to remind all of you to be respectful of the hotel and other guests so that future AA events can be held here. Remember, you may be the only copy of a big book that someone may see. This is an open speaker meeting. The opinions expressed by the speaker tonight are his own and do not necessarily reflect those of Nikki Pop or Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. Please be reminded that the lack of profanity offends no one. And with that, I give you Joey N., who I've heard his story, and he has a lot of experience and hope to share, so I'll turn it over.
Hi, my name is Joey. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Joey.
And this is nice. This is it's better than a whole room of people, I guess. It's however God wanted it to be, and it's good to be here. And Buffy asked me to do this a month or two ago. I'm not sure how long ago it was. And she asked me, and I said yes right away, but it's pretty important that you know that she is the one that asked me to come here and do this, because if there's something that gets said in the next 2 or 3 hours while we're sitting in here together, then you need to go to her and talk about it, because she's responsible for that. But anytime I speak, I always like to start out with a joke. Simply because I find that humor kind of connects us all. It's kind of like chicken soup for the soul. So an alcoholic walks into a bar, and he sits down at the bar, and he's pretty drunk, like most of us are when we get to the bar. And he sits down, and he whips out his hand like this, and he starts pushing on his palm like that, and he holds his hand up to his head, and he starts talking. And the bartender looks at him and says, "Look, buddy, I don't know what you got going on there, but we don't want any trouble around here." The guy says, "Hey, it's all right. I'm a high-tech alcoholic." And he says, "High-tech alcoholic?" He says, "Yeah." He said, "I got a phone programmed into the palm of my hand." He says, "No way." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I bet you a drink that my hand will make a phone call for you." And so the bartender takes his hand. He says, "What number do you want to call?" And he tells him. So he punches it on his palm and holds his hand up to the bartender's head, and the bartender starts talking to his wife, and they end their conversation, and he hangs up his hand, and then the alcoholic's got to go to the bathroom, so he says, "I'll be right back," and he goes to the bathroom, and the bartender notices about 20 or 25 minutes goes by, and the guy's not back, and so he's wondering if he's passed out in the bathroom or whatever, or fallen in the toilet, and so he goes in there to check on him, and he walks in the bathroom, and the alcoholic is pressed up, spread eagle against the wall with no pants on, and there's a roll of toilet paper hanging out of his backside, and the bartender says, "What happened? Did they rob you?" He says, "No, I'm just waiting on a fax." My sobriety date is August the 6th of 2007, and when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't broken per se. I wasn't homeless. I didn't have all sorts of severe consequences in my life. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of going to treatment. I was 17 years old, and I was at a treatment center in Black Mountain, North Carolina. And I just kind of took it as a joke. You know, never did I ever believe that I would be in Alcoholics Anonymous, that my life would be resigned to hanging out with a bunch of dull, boring people smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee. And that was in 2002. And when I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was homeless. Everything I owned fit in 2 duffel bags. I was beaten and broken. I was 30 pounds underweight. I had bug bites and stuff all over me because I'd been homeless and living in the woods. So the progression of alcoholism in my life occurred very rapidly in a very short period of time. And when I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous this time, back in 2007, I was met with something I'd never been met with before. And that was somebody challenging me to go to any length to recover from the disease of alcoholism, and I can't remember that ever happening before. Not to say that it didn't, chances are that it did, but I just wasn't willing or able to hear that. And so we're here today, I guess, to discuss the ninth step, the eighth and the ninth step, and I'll certainly get into that here in just a minute and some of my experience with that. But it's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that that it's very easy for us to procrastinate, to set aside, to kind of put on the back burner some of these things that the program asks us to do. And the program is very clear in what it asks us to do in the steps, and every one of the steps and the directions are very clear. It's very simple. It's not easy. Bill Wilson talks about that. He said, simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. And I found that to be true in my experience. This is a very simple thing, but it means destruction of self-centeredness. It means that self has to die, and a lot of this this work that we go through is uncomfortable, and sometimes it feels like we are dying inside, which actually is in fact true, because if we are taking the directions as given in the Big Book, self is dying, and we're becoming more of a God-centered person and connected with the Spirit, and that's why we're all here today, is because we're in the fellowship of the Spirit. You know, and real quick, an experience with making amends. I'm driving up here today, and I live in Sumter, South Carolina now. It's about 2 hours down the road. I'm actually from Hickory, so I'm sure that you all probably know where that is. But I'm driving up the road, and I get a call from one of my coworkers, and I perceive her as talking to me in an incorrect tone and treating me wrongly, and then so we had some words and we hung up on each other, and I wanted to think that I hung up on her before she hung up on me. You know how that goes. And so I had paused the CD player. I was listening to a speaker tape, and so I hung up the phone, and as I sit there and turn the CD player back on, I realize the speaker is talking about making amends. I'm on my way up here to talk about the ninth step and making amends. And then so at the same time, now this is the Spirit working in my life. At the same time, my mind says, you know, she shouldn't have treated you that way. She shouldn't have talked to you that way. You know, you have every right to be upset with her. But then the Spirit says, you need to make amends quickly. You know, and I picked up my phone. I was getting ready to call her, and I looked down, and there was a text on my phone from her asking me to call her when I had a chance. And so I called her, and she made amends, and I made amends, and we, and so to say that, to say this, that it can be easy for us to become victims of our own mind, victims of our own beliefs, victims of living what we believe to be sobriety when it's actually living as an agent for our own mind. The disease of alcoholism centers in our mind, and I found that I need to seek experience. I need to seek experience in a power greater than myself. And it is only there that I'll recover from this disease. This disease centers in my mind, and it's controlled pretty much most of my life and still can today. And so most of the times when we go throughout our day and make a decision, it's based out of our mind. You know, beliefs are based out of our mind, but the reality is, if you want to know what my beliefs really are, look at my actions. Look at what it is that I'm doing. And so my experience through this program and through the 8th and 9th step and 10, 11, and 12 has been that I don't necessarily have to like what it is that I'm doing or about to do. I don't have to like picking up the phone and calling a creditor and telling them, okay, here I am, I've owed you money, I'm ready to pay. I just have to do it. You know, and our book is clear about that. It pretty much tells us that we need to go out and repair this damage that we've done, the damage that we've done as a result of living life on self-will and running the show ourselves. You know, now I'm not going to sit here and quote the Big Book today or anything like that, but on page 79 it says that it was agreed at the beginning that we need to be willing to go to any length to find a spiritual experience. And that's where this is for me today. In living the way that I used to live, I hurt a lot of people. I stole from a lot of people. I damaged a lot of relationships. And I was not in a lot of places that I was supposed to be. And I find that a lot of the damage that I've caused has not necessarily been in a material sense. You know, have I stolen from people? Yes, of course I did. You know, did I... Did I not work for them when I was supposed to work for them, or whatever the case may be. Have I done a lot of that? Yes, but most of the harms that I've caused to others have been in the form of an emotional sense, have been in the form of talking to someone in a wrong way, or not being there for my grandfather when I needed to be there, or saying I would be at my grandmother's funeral and I was there, but I was drunk. You know, those kinds of things. We've taken, we've ripped away, we've stolen chunks out of people's lives and out of their own peace and serenity by attempting to live life in the way that we've lived. And so when I'm going through this work with my sponsor, and he begins reading through the book with me, and we get into some of these directions in the eighth and the ninth step, I thought I was supposed to go back and say I'm sorry. And I actually thought that when I got into the program. I was, when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was filled with some remorse and guilt and shame for some of the things I had done. And I thought that I immediately needed to go back to these people and tell them I was sorry, you know. And I actually did that a couple of times, and it was, I say a mistake, but not really a mistake. God had that happen in my life for a reason, but... The ninth step is in the order that it's in for a particular reason. You see, in the fifth step, and the fifth step promises, it tells us that we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we can begin to have a spiritual experience. You see, and by the time we get into this work in the ninth step, we will hopefully be somewhat of a changed person. And so when I go back to make amends with someone, I have an honest desire to set the matter right. I have an honest desire to right the wrong that I've caused this person, not to go back and say that I'm sorry. And our book is very clear on that. It says a simple mumbling that I'm sorry won't fit the bill. My experience has been that when in the past, when I've gone back and said that I'm sorry to someone, most every time it was a manipulative, deceitful form of apologizing to someone. I would apologize or say I'm sorry because I wanted the person to like me, or I wanted them to trust me, or I wanted to get back in their hip pocket again. You know, if I had done something wrong to someone and I went back and apologized, then everything would be squashed. They let me back in their life, and then I'd have another attempt at screwing them over one more time. And our book doesn't ask us to do that. This program doesn't. It tells us that we're to go back and right the matters that we've wronged people with, and so forth. I've had some experiences going into making an amends with someone where I thought a particular thing was going to happen. I thought I was going to go to this person and admit my wrongs and explain to them what it is I plan to do to make the matter right and making it right. And I thought that they were going to say, "Oh, Joey, this is so great," and pat me on the back and say, "I'm so thankful that you're back in my life. And can't we just be friends again?" And it didn't happen like that. And I went and I had an experience with a family member, and I went to talk to them and went to make this direct amends with this person. And I thought she was going to do that. She was a church-going lady. She was a religious woman. And so obviously she would have a forgiving spirit when I went to her. And she cut me off from what I was saying. And told me how she felt about the matter. She told me how I had really harmed her. See, in my mind, I had this perception of what it is that I had done to her. But that was from my perception, not from hers. And when she explained to me from her own point of view the things that I had done to her, I had to sit there and listen to it, you know. And our book talks about that as well. It tells us that the other person's faults are not discussed. We take the bit in our teeth. You know, if I go to make a direct amends with someone and they have something that they want to say to me, it is my duty and of my respect to allow them to do that. You know, not to forget that chances are I've spent years and years harming this person, you know. And so in different experiences and going through this work and working with a sponsor and then working with sponsees as well, I've found that that the outcome of an attempt of making a direct amends with someone is of absolutely no concern to me whatsoever. The concern to me is that I have a willingness, a spirit of willingness to walk forward and to admit my wrong and to say, you know, this is what it is that I've done to you. I was wrong, you know, and make my attempt. And the book says it's water over the dam. You know, it's one of the things that I experienced as well was owing money to people and owing money to creditors. When I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and got into this step, my sponsor had me run a credit report from all three bureaus, and we got the credit reports back, and we looked at them, and we compiled the information along with some of the other outstanding debts that I had, and it was in upwards of over $40,000 in collections to hospitals, institutions. I had a $16,000 bill to a medevac company where I was medevaced from point A to point B at one time when I was drinking, and when we came up with that amount and tallied it all up, it was over $40,000, and I looked at it and I said, I'll never be able to do this. I'll never be able to accomplish this. I was working at a job where I was making $8 an hour. It didn't add up. The math didn't add up. And I thought this was such a mountain that I will never ever be able to climb. And as of a couple of weeks ago, that amount of $40,000 has been dwindled down to less than $10,000. And that's a result of God, not me. That's a result of being placed in a position to be of service to God and the people about me and making that possible. And it is true, and it says most alcoholics owe money. And when I've gone into some of these experiences, for instance, calling one of these creditors and explaining the situation, some of them are very ruthless. I remember calling one of them one day and being on the phone with them, and the man on the other end of the phone, he had some sort of choice words to say, basically, and did a very good job at making me feel inferior and not good enough, and that I would never accomplish this task, and that I owed them my life for this bill, and that was nothing more than self-centered fear. And I prayed going into this matter, and prayed during, and prayed after, and what happened was, in talking with the man and admitting what had been going on in my life, we set up a payment plan, and that bill was in upwards of $10,000 itself, and it's paid off now. You know, I've found great freedom in making these amends. It can become easy for us to say, well, I've done some of them, you know, and I'll get to the others at another time. But the program doesn't work like that. This step doesn't work like that. It says made direct amends to such people wherever possible, you know. And if you want to be free from the bondage of self, from the bondage of the disease of alcoholism, from the bondage of worry and regret and remorse and guilt, then I challenge you to go and to make these amends, you know. It's been an experience for me that having hindsight being 2020, I am very grateful that I've not missed those opportunities that I've had. It's almost like very much like sex. And when you're young and somebody tells you about sex and you try and imagine, you're like, man, that sounds good. I have to do that. And then you actually have the experience of doing it and you're like, wow, you know, I need to do this as much as possible, or whatever the case is. I get into making amends, and when I come into the program, I don't really want to go back and walk up to Kyle and say, Kyle, you know, I was wrong. You know, this is what I did to you. And this is how I plan to set the matter right, you know. And I go to him in a forgiving spirit and a willing spirit and whatnot. And I walk away from that, being free from that bondage. And the experience of the power of God in a situation like that is so overwhelming that it cannot be denied, and that it motivates me to want to do more of that, you know. And I destroyed the relationships with my family. In my drinking, I was a drinker that the only thing that stopped me was jail or hospitals. From the moment I started drinking, I was 12 years old, I picked up a jar of homemade whiskey and drank. I lost control. I blacked out. I didn't know what happened. I woke up the next day and wanted to do it as much as possible and as often as possible. And that was the story of my drinking until getting sober. But I got to a point where I would go to AA in an attempt to avoid consequences in my life. And get some clean time, and I would pick up a drink again. You know, I had absolutely no recovery whatsoever. I had no unity, and I had no service, none of the triangle happening in my life. And I would pick up a drink, and in about 3 or 4 months, I'd be in a hospital or jail or whatever the case was, and I'd come to. And my father, my stepmother, my grandparents would be there, friends would be there. Fast forward a few months later, same experience, go wind up in a hospital as a result of drinking, come to in the hospital and about as half as many people are there. You know, fast forward a few months later, same thing, come to in a hospital and half as many people are there. And then the last run, I picked up a drink, and in a matter of 6 weeks, I was laid up in an ICU bed in a coma for 2 days. And when I came out of the coma, I woke up in that hospital room and there was nobody there. And that was a real draining experience. I was quite upset. I had attempted to kill myself, and I came to after not dying. And I was upset, and I was down, and I was out. And then I wondered, and all of this being self-centered. And then I said, well, where's my family? You know, where are these people that love me? And they weren't there. And the first person that did show up there was a former sponsor in AA. And it was this man, and he had a real scratchy, high-pitched voice. And he looked at me and said, well, Joey, you think you had enough yet? And I just kind of looked over at Billy, and I just kind of shook my head, and I wanted him to leave, you know. And I say that to say this, that the result of living life and the way I was living it, I destroyed relationships. I became an unlovable person. I became someone that was too tough to love. You know, people didn't want to involve me in their life. Because of the harm and the damage that I had caused them in their life. And so it was very true in the relationships with my father and my grandfather and my grandmother and whatnot. And the last time I was at my grandfather's house before getting sober, he had put a deadbolt on his bedroom door. And him and my grandmother walked around with the key to that deadbolt in their pocket because they didn't trust me. And when they went to sleep at night, they locked the deadbolt because they were in fear of what it was I would do while they were asleep. Earlier this year, I was spending some time with my grandfather and telling him I was thinking about taking a vacation. And he said, well, why don't you go down to the condo? Here's the key. Now, 4 years prior, he didn't want anything to do with me. He wanted to, he kept me locked out of his house. He wouldn't answer my phone calls. What has happened in the past 4 years has been making direct amends to him, being there for him, going and helping him, spending time with him, being a grandson to him that he never had. This evening I'll drive over to Hickory and see my grandfather and spend some time with him. But to say that see, when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought automatically people were going to trust me again. I thought that because I'm doing this wonderful thing, I'm getting sober, I'm doing the right thing. You need to open up your arms to me in your house and your wallet and your pocketbook and everything else. And it doesn't happen like that. You know, people didn't trust me, that I had hurt them, I had destroyed their lives. And that day I was with my grandfather and talked to him about going on a vacation, and he said, why don't you go to the condo? Here's the key. The overwhelming presence of God was so strong that I knew without a shadow of a doubt that it was his doing and not mine that made that possible. Relationships in my life today have been, they haven't been restored. They have been reborn. I can't really remember having a real honest relationship with family members or friends. It was pretty much always, what can I get out of the situation? What can I take from you? How is it that I can get you to treat me in the way I want you to treat me? And in the third step on page 63, it says we had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. And then it goes on, it says we were reborn. And I found my experience in this program for that statement to be very true, that that coming into a life engaged in a relationship with God and living this way, that I have been reborn, that ideas, emotions, attitudes that I once had are no longer with me, that I'm not the same person that I used to be. And I find that to just be an example of spiritual awakening occurring and continually occurring in my life. you know. It's like, I used to have this experience, right? I'd call somebody up and I'd say, hey, how you guys doing? And they'd say, Joey? I'd say, yeah, we're all right, how are you? I'm good, I was wondering if you're gonna be at home. You gonna be there for a while? I'm getting ready to head over. Oh, no, we're getting ready to leave. You just caught us, we're walking out the door. Oh, really? Yeah, you just caught us. Well, how long are you gonna be gone for? Oh, a couple months at least. Yeah, you just caught, we're getting ready to go. We're gonna have to hang up the phone, we're already late. Oh, okay, well, I guess I'll just talk to you later, Dad. And that was what happened. People didn't want me around, you know? And things have changed today where people actually invite me to come places like here. People invite me to be in their lives. I work in a recovery community or recovery setting where I'm in constant contact with people coming into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get to give back the gift that's been given to me. While drinking, when I would have a job, I would steal from my employer. I would steal time from my employer. I would steal material from my employer. I would just take from my employer. And what has happened in my life today is that I get to go to work and be a wonderful employee to my employer. I get to go in and give of my time, sometimes without pay, to my employer and the people around me. I get to give back what has been so freely given to me. And so what is that when I look at it other than an amends that's taking place to some of my former employers? I had committed a wrong against one of my employers and some people there. I was working at a country club in Hickory, and I worked there for 4 or 5 years, and I had manipulated the manager there to believe I was doing well in my job, and he promoted me to be the locker room manager and then the bar manager and eventually the restaurant manager. And in the process of all of that, I was given a master key to the lockers there in the locker room. And I was given a key to the clubhouse. And I was given the alarm code to the alarm. And so what I wound up doing was I was living out of my car. I had a 1980 Cutlass. I was living out of the back of that. And I would go to that country club at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I would go down to the locker room with that master key, and I would start opening up lockers, and I would take whatever it was I could find, whether it be a golf club or somebody's money clip, anything of value that I could find in there, I'd take it, and I'd go get some money for it and do what it was I was doing. And so it came time to make amends, and I went to my sponsor, and I went to God, and I looked at the situation, and I didn't know how to write that matter. I didn't know how to go back and make right that wrong I had done. Most of the people I had taken from, I didn't know who they were. I didn't know where they were or anything like that. I didn't know which lockers I had gone into. So we write it down and we look at it. And in my daily prayer life, I'm praying about it. And one day in a meditation, it comes to me to simply go to the employer, admit my wrong, and to see where it is that he wants to go with the matter. And so I did that, and so I went back and I approached the employer. I had admitted everything that had happened, and in that I had stolen some things from the country club as well, pieces of art, televisions, audio equipment, and so forth. And so when I went back and I admitted all of these things, it was not an easy thing to do. When I came into the program and I read that step on the wall, made direct amends to such people wherever possible. There were some things I said I wasn't going to do, and that was one of them. I said I wasn't going to go back to this place and admit what I had done, because if they wanted to, they could press charges and I'd go to jail. But I had to be willing to do that. If in sobriety I wound up in jail for a reason like that, then I've obviously got a message to carry inside of jail. I went back to the employer and it admitted what I had done to them. And there were some wrongs I had done, some things I had taken and whatnot that I didn't really even know exactly what it was I had taken. I'd been cooking the books as far as the alcohol inventory had gone and some other things. And I told that to this person. And he said, well, Joey, he said, you know, we're a not-for-profit organization. I said, well, yeah. He said, where do you work at now? And I told him. He said, what kind of agency is that? I said, a not-for-profit organization. He said, the best way you could pay us and this agency back is by going back to your current employer and being the best worker you could be and give to those people your time and your effort. And I walked away from that a free man. I had done something similar. I was living in Myrtle Beach, and I was going to and from AA. And in one of those periods where I had picked up a drink, I had moved into a man's house, and I was hiding my drinking from him. And one day I'd convinced him to give me the keys to his car and his bank card because I needed to drive. I needed to go to my doctor because my back was hurting. And so he gave me his keys and his bank card. And 3 days later, I was on a helicopter bound for MUSC. I had wrecked his car. I had emptied his bank account, and I had destroyed this man's life. And I get out of the hospital. I was in there for 13 days, and I get out, and I really wanted to be sober. I wanted to live a sober life. I wanted to go to AA and get a sponsor and so forth. And I did some of those things, and I worked a little bit of a job, and I was able to pay the man back for his vehicle and for the money I'd taken out of his bank account. And I didn't do it because I honestly wanted to right the matter. I did it because I wanted to get back in his pocket again. I thought that maybe in the future there was a day I would need something from him and he wouldn't give it to me unless I had paid him back. And so I did. And I drank again. And shortly after drinking, he called me one day and he thought I was sober. He said he had to go out of town. He had to go to Maryland for a couple of months and he needed somebody to look over his house. And he needed somebody to take care of his dogs. And I said, well, I'm your guy. You know, keep in mind I'm drinking, but he doesn't know it. And so I show up at his house, and I show up drunk, and he looks at me and he says, Joey, I don't like it when you're drinking. And I said, don't worry about it. I got it under control. And so he goes to Maryland the next day, and I'm in full-fledged alcoholism. The progression of alcoholism in my life was that at that time I was drinking half a gallon of vodka a day. And then I was going at nighttime, and I was going and doing some outside issues, I guess you would call them. And in a matter of 6 weeks, I'd emptied out that man's house of anything of value. I'd emptied out his wine collection. I'd emptied out his coin collection. I'd emptied out anything of value in that man's house. And then I wound up in the hospital. He didn't find out for a couple weeks later what had happened, and he came home. His house was destroyed. All his possessions were gone, and his dogs were locked up in the house, and they had done their business all over the house. And so that was another one of those things that I, when I got into the program, I said that I wasn't going to do. I wasn't going to go back to this man. That's just something that I would be a fool to go back to him and admit all of this and have to pay this stuff back. It's an upward of thousands of dollars. And so I wasn't going to do it. And going through the steps and getting to the ninth step, my attitude had changed. My perception had changed. And I had a desire to set this matter right. And I made an attempt to contact the man. And I was unsuccessful. And I made another attempt, and I was unsuccessful. And see, and in making amends, God's timing is everything. I was unsuccessful in making attempts to contact him. And so some time went by, and I would write a letter, and it would get returned. And I would make a phone call, and it would end up at a dead end, and I couldn't find the man. About a year later, I got on Facebook. And I got on there, and I had a friend request, and it was him. And so I got his information and I contacted him and went back to him. And I began the process of making amends to him. He insisted that I didn't pay him back for the material things, but I've since done so. His main concern was that I live a sober life and give this gift to other people. There was a great deal of freedom that came as a result of that experience. You see, when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous as an unrecovered alcoholic and fall prey to my own beliefs and my own mind and my own ideas, things crop up inside my head and say, I'll never make that amends. I'm just not doing it. Or I'll look at a person and make a judgment about them as being a particular type of way. And that's as a result of being a slave to my own mind. And if we find an attitude of willingness and really get engaged in the program and to begin taking the steps, we will begin to be inspired by God, by the Spirit, rather than our mind. And when that happens, our attitudes and our perceptions about things will change. And so that's what happened in that experience of making amends to that man when I came into the program. And being a slave to my mind, I said I would never, ever do that. It would be an absolutely 100% stupid thing to do. I could go to jail. And being free from that bondage of the mind and being inspiring, having a willingness and making the amends, I got to experience more freedom. I got to experience more of those promises that it reads at the end of the ninth step. At a lot of meetings, you hear about those ninth-step promises at the beginning of the meeting. And I used to think, it says, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. And so I used to read that as I would hear it in the meeting, and they read how it works in the 12 traditions and ninth-step promises, and I would think, man, you know, before I'm halfway through this program, I'm supposed to be amazed. You know, and all these wonderful things are supposed to happen to me. You know, and I'm in the middle of a four-step, and I'm miserable. And I'm not free. I haven't lost fear of people and economic insecurity. You know, I don't intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me. This whole program is a crock of shit. And thank God for a sponsor. Thank God for somebody who'd been through this work and been through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He explained to me. He said, Joey, he says, if we're painstaking about this phase of making amends, then we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. And I found that to be very true. You know, I like to get into the 10th step a little bit because the 10th step, is one of the steps in which I live my life today. And in the 10th step, it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. Vigorously commence this way of living, the way of living where I make a self-appraisal, I admit my wrongs, I go back and make amends, I set forth to improve upon a relationship and conscious contact with God, and that I carry this message to other people. And then as a result of those steps, then I will begin to experience an awakening to the Spirit of God in my life. And if you go out to make an amends, if you're going out trying to make amends without applying 10, 11, and 12 in your life, It's not going to probably work out so well. You know, I found that steps 10, 11, and 12 in that constant relationship and that conscious contact, that going to God and asking for direction and meditating and listening for that while making an amends prior to, during, and after, it is no longer self-inspired. It is no longer inspired by the ideas in my mind. It's inspired by the Spirit of God. Freedom today comes as a result of applying those steps in my life on a regular basis. You know, I'd mentioned earlier, if you want to know what my true beliefs are, look at my actions. You know, some people where I live at, and people that are members of my group, and my sponsor, people that I work with, they know that I am a big supporter, but I really push amends on people that I'm working with and whether I'm not working with them, you know. And it's kind of funny that I was asked to come speak on this topic because I've found the greatest freedom in doing so, you know. Life today is no longer the way that it used to be, you see. The way that I used to live my life was in a constant effort to get what I wanted out of it. And it is no longer that way. My life today is lived in a way where I go to God and ask how I can be of service to Him and the people about me. See, we go in the sixth and seventh step in the book, and it's very short. It's very concise. There's a short prayer in there. It says, once we've done this, we've then completed step seven. And in the seventh step about asking that these shortcomings be removed, and I pray this prayer, a lot of times I think that things are about me. Like, I thought that seventh step prayer was about me. Like, my shortcomings need to be removed, you know, so that then people will like me and, you know. And it has absolutely nothing to do with me. If you look at the seventh step prayer, it says, grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding. You know, to be of service to God and the people about us. Page 77 says that. It says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to people, to God and the people about us. And the way that I fit myself is not like a piece of a puzzle. It's not like that. I fit myself in a spiritually fit manner, you know, and pursuing a relationship with God. I become a fit spiritual being. And as a result of that, he can use me as an agent, like described in the third step, as a worker for him. I can go out and do things for him that I never would have been able to do by myself. You know, and driving up the road today and that experience of the amends that I told you about before making the amends, my mind was telling me and rationalizing these thoughts that I was having about this other person on the end of the phone. And it, what was happening is was rationalizing a resentment that was dwelling inside of me. It was being fueled. It was growing. It was like it was coming out of its shell. And what happened was that God, the Spirit, did for me what I could not or would not do for myself, you know. He put some things right there in front of me to catch my attention, to say, Joey, you don't live this way anymore. This is how you live. Now you have a choice to make. You know? I'm no longer a prey to the obsession to drink. I'm no longer a prey to selfishness and self-centeredness when applying these principles in my life. I no longer wake up in the morning wondering what it is I'm going to do to get another drink today. The obsession to drink has been removed, and it's been removed as a result of this work and continuing this work in my life on a daily basis. I got to experience something last weekend. The place that I work at is a recovery community, and I was actually a resident there 4 years ago. And when I lived there, I was in an apartment, and I'd been there for a couple months. I was what they call the senior resident. And two new guys had come in, like, right off the street. One of them come right out of detox, and one of them come right off the street. And they were both were detoxing from opiates, one from methadone and one from heroin. And so there I am with these guys, and these guys are down and dirty, and they're nasty, and they're making a mess everywhere, and they're detoxing in where I'm living at. And I have to follow them around and watch after them and help them and clean up after them and whatnot. And one of the guys I ended up sponsoring, and the other guy has become a great friend, and that was 4 years ago. Last weekend, we had this thing somewhat like a homecoming. Both of those guys came to town. They stayed in a spare bedroom in my apartment where I live today, and all three of us were sober. And the reason that all three of us are sober today is because we've applied this program in our life, and we've found a fellowship in the Spirit of God and not in the spirit of the people, because there is no such thing. It was always easy for me to go to AA, to go to a meeting, even to get a sponsor, even to show up early or to stay late. But never did I ever have a willingness to go to any length and take these steps. The result was always drinking. I would drink every time, and I didn't understand why. And it wasn't until someone explained to me what exactly it means on page 58 when it says, if you've decided you want what we have and have a willingness to go to any length, then you're ready to take certain steps, you see. And I had to find that willingness to go to any length. And that was born out of pain, that was born out of misery, that was born out of depression, that was born out of hopelessness as a result, a direct result of alcoholism in my life. I get to live a life today of purpose and of value to others and my family and so forth. I have some friends that will be driving up to the convention this weekend. They'll be here later this afternoon. I have another friend who's speaking sometime tomorrow, and we get to meet new people. We get to meet everybody that's here. We get to spend time in the fellowship of the Spirit. We get to then share our experience with others and have other people share their experiences with that. And as a result of that, we grow stronger both as a group and also in ourselves and our relationship with God, because God does speak through people, you see. I have a life today where I'm very passionate about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm very thankful that someone spent time with me going through this book and going through these steps and explaining to me out of their own experience what things mean and spending time with me. And it is of great pleasure that I'm allowed to do that today and that I'm allowed to come up here and speak. I guess we're pretty much out of time. I got one thing I want to read out of the big book because it pretty much sums up my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. It has come true in my life today. It's in A Vision for You. And quick thing about A Vision for You, it's funny because I have a friend who came into the program never having been exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he gets a big book handed to him, and he's the kind of guy that says when he gets a book, he's going straight, he'll read the first page and he'll go right to the last chapter. So he goes to the last chapter in the book, it's A Vision for You. Never been exposed to AA, and he picks up A Vision for You, and he starts reading. And he starts reading about these horrible four horsemen, right? And he's reading about terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And he's thinking, now here I am in this program, and I'm going to wake up to this hideous four horsemen. Thank God he turned the page and read what it is that I'm about to read. It says, we've shown you how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people that I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus, we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You're going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly, like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself, that others may survive and rediscover life. You will then learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. Thank you.
Thank you, Joey. Okay. Anonymity. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles of four personalities, and I've asked Jennifer to read the Unity reading.
By the close of 1941, AA numbered 8,000 members. The mushroom process was in full swing. AA had become a national institution. Our society